if you're here, welcome back to Block Party. I'm Issa Rae.
And I'm Prentice Penny, and this is the last episode covering season one of Insecure.
Yes, sure, we made it. Yes. Let's pop a little something.
Yeah, that's that Via Ray got that fresh pop.
Yeah, you already know. You know what it is. We did so much this season.
We did do a lot.
We rewatched the episodes. Yeah. We covered our favorite Black TV shows. Yeah. I learned a lot of stories about the writer's room that I forgot, or things that I just, yeah, that escaped my mind. We dissected the writer's room and our process. It's been a good little productive season.
Yeah, our finale is presented by Gatorade Lower Sugar, so cheers.
Cheers, cheers. We made it.
We made it, just like when we made it in the real season.
Ah, love those bubbles.
fresh Black excellence bubbles.
So Insecure would not be what it is without our viewers. We get a lot of questions.
Yes.
So today we decided to do a special mailbag episode for our viewers where we're going to answer any question they have about Insecure.
I'm so scared. I'm terrified.
Me too. Some of these questions, I'm already irritated in advance. Irritated with love. Irritated in a cousin way.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You know, we've done this podcast. We had talked about doing this for a while now.
Yeah.
And how has it been for you talking about the show on the mic and reliving a lot of these things, doing a podcast about the show?
You know, the best thing, I'm always happy to do stuff with you.
Yes.
On the other side, I'm like, I do not want to be a podcast bitch. Like, when I actually told myself I wasn't going to do like any interviews and stuff this year because I don't like sound bites from podcasts. Okay. One, I like to do interviews when I have stuff to promote.
Sure.
And here I am doing a podcast and then clipping myself. Like when the Achilles dick shit went viral, I'm like, and people making articles about it. I'm like, oh, I did this to myself. But generally, like, it's been a fun time to revisit it, like, with purpose and for this anniversary.
Yeah.
How about for you?
I mean, I think the same way. I mean, you know, we always
you
love
hate
doing
being this. Also, well, no, you have a balance.
Like,
being
like,
in front of, like, the camera.
I don't, that part I don't, mix. Yeah. Like, it's, I mean, obviously, you know, you and I love doing things together. So talking to you is super easy, and talking about something that we were in the trenches for. And just, it's just that thing where, like, when you're in it, Even when we're in it, like, we would always laugh.
Yeah.
But it was always very stressful. But now having some distance from it, it's just like that thing that happened to you that was traumatic that now you can laugh about. You know, you're like, oh, man, we almost died. And you're like, yeah, that was crazy. So it's a lot of that. But again, having everybody come back on the show, like Amy and Yvonne and obviously all the people that we've had on and talking about those things, it's just been great and fun. So
yeah, I agree. So, are you ready to get into these questions?
I'm nervous, but I feel like let's do it.
All right, we'll be right back after this. Thank you all so much for sending us your questions. We are so excited to listen to your voicemails and to read your questions out loud. Disclaimer, Prentice and I haven't heard or read any of these in advance, so you will be hearing our live reactions.
Yes, I'm definitely excited to see who's up first. I'm so scared. I'm so scared for the culture and my career after hearing this.
All right, so our first voicemail comes from Carla. Let's hear it.
Hey, y'all. So my question is, we've heard so much about how you two became creative partners, but I'm curious about how you became friends.
Aww.
I want to know if it was something that happened naturally over time, or was there a specific moment that you can recall when you realized that your relationship had become a little bit more personal? And I also want to know, now years later, how do you balance being genuine friends with being creative collaborators who sometimes really have to challenge each other? Thank you.
Whoa. Shout out to Carla. That's a good question.
That's so funny because I just called you my friend in my head the other day.
Really?
And maybe even out loud because obviously I have so much respect for you. And it's been like I didn't realize how much of a mentor you were to me until after the season. Like, I think I knew we were so in it. And I never think in terms of mentoring. Whenever people ask, like, who are your mentors? It's not like you come to mind because of
the
process.
Right, because we're peers. We're basically the same.
But that is literally, as much as it pains me to say that, like, you are kind of one of the first peer mentors I've had in a way. And so now that we had some distance from it, I was like, oh, he is my friend. And I'm like, and he is a collaborator and I want the best for him. And like, I do know so much about your life and we don't like talk every day, but this has brought us obviously closer together, and I'm hearing about your updates in a way that makes me so happy, and like the family stuff. So it's been a journey.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. I remember I feel like I don't remember a moment where I was like, that's my sister. Mm-hmm. It just always felt you were like as a big brother. Like it felt like, because you and Melina are obviously closer in age than we are or than I am. So it always felt like I was a big brothery to like two sisters. And so, and we just felt like a family to me out the gate. So I can't say like, oh, this moment is when we became friends. I just remember we made each other laugh. We had each other's best interests at heart. We were talking early on about like strategy of how we were going to do things. So it almost felt like two kids kind of like trying to get over on the parents a little bit. I don't know how to best describe that. Of like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to say like this. We're going to, you know, like when you're a kid, like, okay, we're going to tell mom, we're going to go here. Yes. Always scheming. And so it just always, so I don't know if there was a moment, but I definitely always felt like after the first season or even in it, I felt like she's like my sister. And I don't know how to describe it other than it completely just sort of was.
Yeah. And you just reminded me, like, even after our first meeting outside when none of us had, like, whatever done.
Yeah.
We started shutting each other. I left like, oh, he's kind of like my brother. I have older brothers. So, like, that was the vibe to me. And I think, you know, that just always rang true. And to the challenging each other, like, you know, we're working on stuff together now. Even the call that we had the other day, I was just like, man, I miss this so much of just, like, there's always been a way that you critique things or you challenge or you question things or challenge things that's just really creatively fulfilling, you know? So it's always going to be kind of, I think, part of our dynamic.
I do too. And I totally agree. And I think we recognize the talent both of us have and both of us bring. And to me, it's almost like somebody was asking me and I was like, it's kind of like the way you think like a Quincy Jones and a Michael Jackson. It's like, I know how to help. You know what I mean? Like, I know, like, you do this thing, I do this thing, and we know how to balance those things and challenge each other and give each other the things that they need to do those things. Did that make you uncomfortable because I said you're Michael Jackson?
A little bit. I did give a little hee-hee in my head. But,
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, there's a thing that happens. Sure. And so it's hard to say, like, the way chemistry happens through collaborators, to me, felt very natural. And I think there's another way that I think that, like, we talked about our personal lives very openly. I mean, you were like, we were just saying the other day, I was like, when we shot the pilot, like my kids were on set and now my oldest is about to go to college. So we've seen so much of we've been each other's, you know, we've gone to each other's like weddings and been around for so many other milestones and things that were like my father passing. Yeah. And so there was so many things that you share a life with someone that you're just like, I never felt that I had to guard my life. And I don't think you ever felt that way either. So I think there's a way that we're sharing life that became more than just collaborate. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think those kind of moments just naturally become that.
Yeah. And especially you spoke to the stress of it, but like you have been my willingly, unwillingly venting board when so much shit has gone down. Because sometimes, like, we would have to have, like, a 9 a.m. meeting or a 10 a.m. meeting. Yeah. And I might have had a shitty day the day before. Some drama might have gone down. And then you're coming into the meeting being like, this bitch did this. And, like, even on a, like, again, on a brother level, whether it's the advice or whether it's listening, like, a creative partnership is such an intimate partnership. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the core of it, right? Is being vulnerable with someone, so.
That's what's up. Thank you, Carla, for that question.
This is super insightful. I hope the rest of them are like this. I fear they will not be, though.
Okay, our next question is from Ashley W. Hi, Issa. My name is Ashley Wooten. I'm currently creating multiple web series strictly for YouTube, and I find myself in a very similar place to you when you started The Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl. I would love to know more about your process during that time, specifically building a team. What did the process look like when you decided to bring on crew and team members? How did you know it was time? And then the Hollywood transition, what did the transition look like for you logistically and creatively when moving from Awkward Black Girl to Insecure? Thank you so much for inspiring creators like me. Thank you, Ashley.
Two for two so far. I mean,
I know. I wrote about this process. I have a little book called I Should Be Smarter By Now, and that should tell you everything that I went through during that process, like the mindset that I was in. With Awkward Black Girl specifically, I'm a person that doesn't like to ask for help. And it was very hard for me to, one, start, and then two, be like, I don't know how to do this.
Right.
Who can I hit up to help me figure this out?
Who was your first, I'm curious, who was your first sort of call to be like, help me figure this out?
Devin, my best friend, just to be like, hey, can you hold the camera for me? Because I know you're down. And then once I made the product, then people came to me. Yeah. And that's when it helped. So that's when my friend Tracy came and was like, let me be your producer, and got a crew. And then like other actors started reaching out to me, mm-hmm. like, let me be in this project. And so it built organically from there. Building a team was just like, it was, the audience was demanding it, yeah. too, where they were just like, yo, this is, the quality can be upped. Like the sound.
Really, people were saying that. People were saying
in
that.
In the comments. Because they liked it. They were right, being constructive, right. Criticism wise. And then the transition to Hollywood, I mean, does anybody that like, we all knew we wanted to be a part of this industry, but it's kind of like when it's your time, it's your time, yeah. In some ways. And I was just continuing to create and create until eventually it got attention. But I will say that people underestimate press, but getting a good press look, I think, is what set me off. Like being able to get someone to write about my things, mm-hmm. like helped bring attention and legitimize it in a way that I think was big.
The process of Awkward Black Girl, because obviously, you know, you talked about you and Amy and Tracy and all you guys sort of writing, yeah. these things. Do you think there would have been a harder transition in certain ways?
It would have for sure been a harder transition. Like, yeah, I mean, we talked about it even on this show, but like the mini writer's room that was nowhere near the writer's room with, you know, Insecure and you still soft prepped me for like mm-hmm. pitching things on a project that was my own that other people might not like, right. you know, because it's you just by yourself and you might shoot down your own ideas. But when you really fuck with something and then you say it out loud and people are like lukewarm about it, right. That's a new feeling to like be able to like absorb. So if that my first time had been in the room,
oh my God.
Like I would have gone home and cried, you know,
yeah,
I
yeah.
like, oh shit, what am I doing? I don't know. I would have had no confidence, I yeah. think. So that exercise was really helpful because I don't know about you. When you write things, do you have a pool of people that you share it with immediately? Or are you pretty much?
I think internal? It depends on the tone of the project too. Like there are certain people that I know, like, okay, this might feel more in their tone, even if they're not, it exactly right. You know what I mean? There are people who I also go to for certain things that are like, you do this thing well. So like I'm struggling with X or struggling with Y.
Is that pre like getting a manager and an agent? Are there peers that you have or?
Now it's a little different, obviously, just because of how you, know, sure. you work. But I think.
But then, early on, before you had an agent and a manager.
Early on. Yeah, it was interesting. Like a lot of my writer friends were drama writers from school. Like Dana and some like Terrence Winter or some other people. So I didn't have a ton of comedy people in this. So I was sort of like kind of just like winging a different friend. Like shout out to Karen Jess. Like, so aww. Karen Jess is an amazing writer who my wife went to Spelman with.
I didn't know.
And
know
so how I got my first thing was Karen had met my wife at a Spelman barbecue, like an LA alumni barbecue. And my wife was like, oh, my boyfriend writes. And you know, whenever you hear like my boyfriend and my cousin, do you go, like, yeah. I'm tuning this out.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be trash. And so, but Karen was so sweet. Karen had just got on as a writer trainee on Girlfriends. And she was like, yeah, I'll talk to him or whatever. And we just developed a friendship. And for 3 years, I would just send her, here's what I'm working on. I was writing, you know, then you were writing specs, like a spec Scrubs or a spec Will and Grace or whatever. And she would just give me notes. And eventually 3 years later, she was now moving up in the ranks and I wrote like a spec Scrubs. And she's like, I think this is really good. I'm gonna give this to Mara. And that's how I got a writer trainee on Girlfriends.
I did not know that story. That's crazy. I didn't know you went back with Karen like that.
Yeah. So I've known. Yeah.
That is. It's also an embarrassing sentence to say. Like, my boyfriend is a writer.
Because Tasha was a full attorney for the city of LA. So I was like a substitute teacher. So yeah, she had no business being with me.
Which also means, well, I mean, she believed in you.
She did. Of course.
So
is there a through line through from the beginning to what, how you are in the room now that you're like, this has always stayed consistent about me or your process or any of that?
Listening to everything and make sure that like all of the idea is out before I rebut, like goes such a long way.
Yeah.
And I found it so rewarding.
I was talking with somebody. I was like, it's like when you're driving from LA to San Francisco and you can take the 5 or the 101 mm-hmm. and they're two different routes,
yeah,
right?
One is very scenic.
And one is very scenic and you kind of have little adventures and things, see things that you're, but it's going to take longer to get to San Francisco versus if you take the 5, it's a straight shot, but you're not going to see as much interesting thing. And the line, I feel like as a showrunner, is you're always balancing, when do I need to take the scenic route?
Yeah.
And when do I need to get there? Quickly. And you're always trying to balance those two routes of how to get to a point. So that's where I try to always take like, okay, is now a scenic route moment or is now a straight to the destination route moment.
That's
and
so real.
Just mentorship.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma Report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. By now, y'all already know that I'm no stranger to talking about mental health. I've been around enough people who think that handling everything alone is just what you do, that somehow just talking about what's actually going on with you is a weakness. And trust me, I get it, and I understand where that idea comes from. But I also know that nobody has all the answers by themselves. Not the most put-together person in the room, not you, not me. That's where BetterHelp comes in. It's the world's largest online therapy platform. Over 30,000 licensed therapists. More than 6 million people served. And get this, they have a 4.9 out of 5 average rating from over 1.7 million real client reviews. And the process is straightforward. You fill out a short questionnaire, they match you with a fully licensed therapist, and if it's not clicking, you can switch. No explanation needed. BetterHelp has been doing this for 12 years, and they know exactly what they're doing. So if you've been feeling overwhelmed, stuck, or even insecure about how to move forward, just know that it's more common than we let on. And now is as good a time as any to check in with yourself and really ask, do I have someone in my corner? You deserve that. We all do. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/insecure. That's betterhelp.com/insecure.
All right, we're 2 for 2.
Yeah.
Let's keep this one going. Let's play the next voicemail, which is Rob. So let's hear what Rob's got to say.
What's going on, y'all? This is Rob Milton. I am an artist who was actually blessed to have their music featured on this incredible show, season 4, episode 9, to be exact.
I know, that's right.
But my question for today is this. What is one moment, one line maybe, that was improvised in season 1 that you love the most?
Aww, yeah. I love that. Shout out Rob Milton. I feel like I'm on a radio. This is the nice like, touch.
Caller, yeah. caller, you say what? Long time listener, first time caller. friend of the show. That's Rob, friend of the show.
This is fire.
I would say straight Lee Daniels is... I mean, it's hard to know too, because so many of our lines, you go like, was that scripted? Was that improv?
Do you listen to yourself all the time? I have a podcast. and it's appropriate for your improv line for this. But yeah, that shit had me cracking up.
Yeah.
It was just so quick and stupid.
And no follow-up.
No follow-up whatsoever.
Just like, there's a podcast that I don't listen to? It also was like...
On track for that. Yeah. They didn't know she was running a marathon. They didn't know she had a podcast. They just... Yeah, shout out to Natasha, the improv queen.
Was you could see Beaties in the eyes. Beaties was that's Beaties. That's Beaties. That was all improv. You could see Beaties in the eyes. Beaties.
Yeah. All right, we got a lot of good music questions in. This first one is from at Jorge A. Reyes on IG. Give some stories on the processes when you wrote a scene to a specific song and it happened, when you had to find a new song, when you wanted another, how often the original song made it through, reaching out to the artist who said yes and who said no, and fights between the staff as to the right song. Woo! There are a lot, sometimes...
You were really good at this in terms of having a song that you'd write to, so I'll let you speak to this.
For sure. Yeah. Like, I would have songs in mind that, you know, I definitely wanted to have featured on the season, that I would know what scene they would go for, and I would... beg Keir, our music supervisor. I'd
shout
be
out
like,
to Keir Lehman.
Shout out to Keir Lehman. I'd be like, I definitely want this song to be in our show. I don't want nobody else to use it. Can you just please like keep tabs? Just please. These are the songs that I want to make sure are in the show. And he'd always be like, we're going to be fine. And he would, you know, mm-hmm. like I never saw maybe like one time in later seasons, we never shared songs with other shows. And there were definitely like, he was a clearing champion. Like sometimes... To your question about if songs, were there songs that we wanted to make in this show that we just already said no, he would be really good about negotiating and figuring out like what rate they would want or just talking them into like, this is a good look for you.
Yeah.
I can't remember any, like even Drake, I was surprised. Mm-hmm. First episode, we were like, we had Kendrick, we had Drake in it. We had, I think those were the biggest songs and was worried. And I can remember the first argument we have. Me and Melina would argue about music all the time.
Yeah, I would just like put in Ice Cube. Y'all like, no. So I made one musical suggestion and y'all immediately looked at me like I said, called y'all all kind of names. So I said, I'm going to just stick over here to breaking these stories.
But no, there was one, this was actually in season two. Actually, the opening song was like a big thing for
us. Yeah, it was.
And I think our editor, Mark, was, I think he might have already placed it. All right. Uh-huh. And we were like, we'll never be able to afford this.
I think he did. I think he did place it.
And we fell in love with it and we weren't going to be able to afford it. So we were trying to find replacements and we got like original people to do it. And I was like, I want to make sure that it's an LA artist. I want it to feel LA. And so we were going back and forth and I was like, maybe like Let's Play House is such an LA classic. And Melina was like, who's not from LA, was like, no. Nobody will know that, blah, blah. And I was like, all right. And so we were like going through different songs. We were talking about Tupac. We were just trying our best to find what that would be.
Because that song was hot when it came out. So it was like, this is going to be super expensive.
And yeah, it was. Let's Play House, I eventually got into season two when Lawrence goes to the barbecue. I was very excited. but yeah, then HBO was like, we love the song too. That's the best thing.
Yes.
When you get a network, this is a trick. When you submit an episode with your favorite choices and the network will watch a cut and they'll love the song just as much. There were several times when it was like, we could not afford a song. We turn in a cut with the replacement with a cheaper song and they'd be like, we like that so much. And I was like, yes, you're on the hook for it. So I think that happened with All Right for sure.
So we're going to play another voicemail. It's Deja.
Okay.
And let's hear what Deja has to say.
Hi, this is Deja Sparks. I was calling because I was watching the Block Party thing for Insecure on HBO Max, and they put this number on here saying, call this number to ask your question. Anyway, if this is the right number, my question is, what is Issa's zodiac sign, and when is her birthday? Because they tell us, oh, she's having a birthday. She has all these birthdays. We don't know what her sign is and when her birthday is, none of that. And I need to know what sign everybody else is to. Kelly, Molly, Tiffany, Lawrence, everybody.
Why she sound like she hiding from her man? Like she has to, or like at work.
I'm not supposed to be on the phone. He won't let me use the phone, but I.
we have thought about the signs. We talked about it in the room, but I wasn't as big on signs when we were in the room as I am now.
Oh, you're a signs person now.
I'm a huge signs person now. And so we didn't really talk about it in the room until maybe later seasons. Mm-hmm. And then HBO made a graphic at the end of the final season. And released it. And people were up in arms about what these characters were. So Issa D is a Pisces.
Like Molly is a Capricorn.
And Pisces, as an Issa D, Pisces are really like emotional. And on the Capricorn side, Molly is a hard worker.
Yes.
I'm an actual Capricorn, so I see elements of myself in Molly, but not, I don't think Molly represents Capricorns on the relationship side. That's not how we move.
Kelly is a Leo all tracks.
Yeah, definitely. 1,000% Kelly is a Leo.
Yeah, my friends who are Leos are,
And they are very like center of attention-y in a like, their life of the parties in so many
big
ways.
Personalities, big, for personalities. Sure. Big personalities, yeah. For sure. I didn't know Tiffany was a Virgo.
Tiffany as a Virgo does track to me.
What are Virgos? I don't know Virgos.
They're also hard workers are very meticulous.
Okay.
They're very like, it's fine. It's fine. They can have a passive aggressive side. Amy Aniobi is a very Virgo, actually.
Okay.
Chabby and Gemini also tracks Two-Faced. Just kidding. I do love a Gemini.
Derek is a Libra balance.
Yeah, tracks, that's tracks. Okay. They ate this. Nathan as a Sag.
Nah, I don't know how I feel about this. I'm a Sag.
I don't know. You be ghosting people?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely good to like Irish goodbye in a lot of situations.
Well,
yeah.
You got mental health issues?
I mean, for sure.
I'm a Black man.
I think definitely, I'm definitely fiery.
Okay.
I definitely can be,
Yeah, when you turn up, you turn up. Yeah. And this reminds me of like even Nathan in that first scene when we meet him and he's like, Steals on dude.
Yeah, steals on dude.
All right, y'all, let's keep these voicemails coming. Y'all are doing a great job. Let's listen to this next voicemail.
Hey, guys. Big fan here. I've watched enough times to notice pretty much everything. You guys talked about how you got rid of the inner monologue after episode one. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you also changed Frida's character after that episode. In the beginning, she was kind of rude to Issa after the school visit, but subsequent episodes paint her as someone more careful with her words and someone who wants to be Issa's friend. Is that just me, or did y'all do that?
That's a great question and great observation. I would say that, like, I will say that I think Frida evolved as our relationship with Issa evolved. Yeah. I think we were watching Frida through Issa's eyes initially, especially in the pilot. We're in her inner monologue and she didn't like none of her coworkers.
Yeah.
but I will say that also the actress Lisa Joyce also has such a buoyant energy and she's so fun and she's so like sweet and endearing. I think she brought a lot of that to Frida and we wanted to mine that.
I totally agree. And I think that's the difference when you're writing a character in the abstract before it becomes three-dimensional too, right?
Sure.
Where you go like, oh, I think this is the energy these characters will play. And then an actor comes in and embodies that energy and you go, oh, you're actually like, that may not be a fun color on you, right? And also like, there are so many people at your job that didn't like you, mm-hmm. that like having another character that's kind of there to scold you feels like not as interesting. And also feel like if I was to do like a deep dive, I would say maybe Frida felt like Issa's sort of passiveness about the job hasn't yielded her to step up like to some degree and be taken seriously. And I think that's sort of shifted. But I think Lisa's just energy was fun to be like, I want to be an ally. Mm-hmm. And I think that was just a fun energy and a fun color on her, and that she can recognize that. And I think we hadn't, all the other characters who were at We Got Y'all had a very much like, I know better and I'm teaching these young Black kids what to do. And I think Frida was there to be like, if we had a show, I would be like, oh, she's the prequel to Joanne.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We even talked about that. Like, oh, when Issa left We Got Y'all, did Frida ultimately take over
We Got Y'all? And we see she did. Please tell us about working with Solange. Issa, can you talk a bit about working with Keir Solange and the music supervisors on this first season?
Yeah, I mean, hard agree. Keir was incredible. Yeah. I think initially we just gave the mandate. Like, we wanted female artists, we wanted independent artists, and we wanted artists from LA.
Yeah.
And he was just great about introducing us to new artists. And then Solange, we had, of course, the added benefit of having her on the first season. And just, you know, Melita spoke to this in the second or third episode, but like, Solange was a DJ and Solange has access just via being an artist herself and obviously her sister to so many other artists before we do.
Yeah.
And so she put us on, and she had a label at the time, Saint Heron. And so we were able to just be a place of music discovery.
Yeah.
And like, I cherish that. But Keir would send us music drops, I'd say weekly. And I would just go through those music drops and like, highlight, oh, this could be good for that. Knowing that we had the story, knowing what stories we had in mind, be able to like highlight, okay, this would be great for this, this would be great for this. And then simultaneously, those music drops would go to our editors. Shout out to our editors first, you know, from the beginning. I'll shout out Mark and Nina, but like, they had incredible, incredible music taste.
Yes,
so they would
sure.
sometimes take those music from those folders that Keir and Solange would provide. And then they would place music in the rough cuts that we hear. So we'd always have like a bass, and sometimes it'd be like, oh, this is knocking. And sometimes it'd be like an immediate like, ooh, can't wait to replace this. Can't even watch this show because the song is wrong. Yeah, I think for me, so much of like enjoying the episode and feeling like the episode was right, like down to the score, which Rafael Sadiq provided. Like, I think a lot of people don't know that he is like, just a goat. He would listen to the episode. We'd have a spotting session, which is basically we would sit on the couch in the editing room and the editor would play the episode and the music supervisor, Keir, and Rafael Sadiq and a music editor would be there watching the episode live with us, and we'd stop it and be like, we need an actual song here. And then this is a moment where we need score. And Rafael Sadiq would be like, okay, what vibe are you looking for? And we'd have to describe like, oh, it's tense, or oh, it's like, it's whimsical or whatever. But it was still a specific tone that he curated for the show. So he would like get on his bass or piano or whatever. And then like they would send us the music and then he'd sample it out. And like we sometimes they'd be like, oh, which is insane that we got to
do this.
Can you take the drums out a little bit? Like, please, Mr. Sadiq, I know that she just, you make this, but he'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, no problem. We can like, or we could tone this down. And yeah, that was just like thinking about that now is insane. I feel like I'm saying this out loud and realizing that for the first time.
It's wild. Like those were some of my favorite moments of the just like full circle moments where you're just like, I can't believe this is happening right now. Like we're telling Rafael Sadiq like less guitar or less piano. Yeah. And then I was like growing up in high school and like listening to Tony. And like, I remember, so growing up, I have a friend, I won't name him. And I used to get a ride with him to school every day because I didn't have a car. And so he broke up with his girlfriend and Tony has a song called Pain on their first album, which is a great song, but it's 7.5 minutes long.
Oh.
It's a beautiful song about having your heart broke. And my friend, this is when you had a tape, put that song back to back to back to back to back to back to back on a tape on both sides. So you know when that tape hits the end, it flips back. We would be driving to school for like 3 weeks listening to Pain.
Did he have his heart broken?
Yes.
Oh, sad.
And so I would be like, can we play anything else? And he'd be like, nah, it's just Pain all day, and driving to school and coming home. And I told Rafael Sadiq, I said, I still love this song, but I told Rafael that story. He was laughing so hard. But the fact that I could tell him that story about something that happened to me when I was 17 is just wild. And so just being like, you just don't know how you're going to sit with people that were inspiration to you or part of your life. Again, we talked about that with like Debbie Allen and people like that, that you're just like, you can't believe that we get to do this. And so, but just sitting there watching him talk about music and it was just really incredible. So,
yeah. And also watching him watch the episodes.
Yeah. Because
they would also be watching the episodes for the first time with us. And like they would sit through it and like hear him be like, oh shit. Like that's what I was like, all right. They reacted. That's dope as hell. We're doing something right.
No, that was really invested. Great. Yeah, Raphael's awesome.
All right. Another music question.
Ooh, all right.
A viewer asked, a lot of people shout out the Insecure soundtrack because it marked big life moments for them. Breakups, new love, quitting a job, friendship drama, everything. What is a favorite life moment that you all filmed in season 1 that was set up perfectly with the song? I love BJ, the Chicago kid, when Heart Crush plays. That was another song that was in Kier's music drop. I was like, oh, this is a finale song. This is when Lawrence leaves. Like, it's such a heartbreaking song. And I feel like Issa would have been playing that on repeat for 3 weeks after that night, after crying on the couch with Molly.
One moment I love is when Yvonne and Jadena are dancing to Girl. I love that moment because it's one of the few times in the season where you feel like love is hopeful for Molly besides Jared, you know what I mean? That comes with like a lot of other complications. But that moment of just, she's had a stressful day. It just felt very relatable, which is like, I've been dealing with these crazy white people at my job and I don't want to do this to the sister. And I'm just dealing with stress and I'm on this date. I'm kind of here, not here or whatever. And just to have like him kind of, you know, pull her in and just to let loose in that moment. It's just a really beautiful moment, the way it's shot, the way it's cut. And even the song, and the song too, that's in the couch montage is great.
Oh,
it's great
to me. You know what I think about?
Because it has so many good undulations of their moments.
I feel like that was a Solange choice. I mean, for sure. Another one where I think back, I switched out a song that Solange put at the end of season 1, episode 3.
When they're out there on the couch?
On the couch, yeah.
On the couch on the curb?
What y'all motherfuckers doing with that couch? She had a song that was there that I wasn't privy to at the time. And I was like, I'm not really feeling it. Can we get another choice? And we ended up doing Erykah Badu, I've Been Going Through It All, which is still a great song. And then I rediscovered the song on my own and it became one of my favorite songs
of all time.
It was Emily King, Distance. And it was perfect. for that scene. I was like, she knew what the fuck she was doing. And yeah, like now going back, I would be like, that would have been a perfect song to end it. But that was another just example of her being ahead of her time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she's like, I'm putting y'all up. I'm putting y'all on game. But no, it didn't happen often where, you know, she generally had
like great taste
and great awareness of what the show should sound like. If anything, it was like the balance of newer artists versus older artists.
Yeah, I think that was like, I mean, I think that was a very intentional thing that I think you were trying to do that I think that we were trying to do, I think, across the board in our show, like whether that be, you know, new writers, new actors, new music. I think it was just trying to infuse the culture with something fresh is the wrong word, but just introducing new elements to things that just weren't there before. And how do we continue to do that in our show? Especially in a space where so much of Black television or movies is like, who's the rapper you got? Who's the so-and-so you got? Where it's like, for us, it has to be this tried and true, like, guarantee versus, like, with white TV shows and movies, they'll just be like, yay, this guy directed a YouTube thing an Instagram post. Let's give him an $80 million movie. You know what I mean? So I'm just saying, like, that they just do that, right? And it's like, so they'll just, like, take more risk with like those things. And so I think we were trying to find our way to do that too.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Let's hear from our next caller.
All right.
Hey, Block Party. This is Christopher Michael from DC. This question is for Issa. So the Broken Pussy video goes viral on episode 5 and your first thought wasn't to call Lawrence. Wasn't that man, Mr. Internet, Georgetown, Tech World, all that. So you couldn't have gone to your man and said, babe, I need to help figuring this out instead of going to Daniel? Choices matter, and so do secrets. So what was really going on in your head? Did it never occur to you to call Lawrence?
Chris, see, I knew
I knew this call was coming. That's why I said we 2 for 2, 3 for 3, and then Christopher called in personally. You couldn't have called your man? I mean, hey.
Christopher, first of all, just like a man, you not using all your senses, because in the very top of the episode, what is Issa doing? She is showing her man the emotional damage and turmoil that she was going through. She is showing him the Broken Pussy video. And what's he doing? Laughing, cracking jokes, asking irrelevant questions. Like, was this the night that we... Nigga, you see the video is on the internet. Like, duh, it's the same outfit I left you with. Duh. Like, why are you asking these questions? So Issa, in her frustration, had no other options. So like, Christopher, please, I know you Lawrence high, but she did go to her man. Thank you so much though. Thank you for the call. Thank you for your emotion. Thank you for your emotion.
I love that you said choices matter. Yeah. Damn.
He said that.
He said choices matter. Words matter. I think this happened to Christopher.
I know. I heard like a little timber in his voice too. Like, cause why wouldn't you go? Why wouldn't you go to your man?
I think he also said, I went to Georgetown. And I think Christopher went to Georgetown. I think this is too close to home. All right, let's play the next voicemail. Caller.
Hey, Issa. Hey, Prentice. This is Anissa from Brooklyn.
What's up, Anissa?
Huge fan of the show. It has become one of my comfort shows. Since it seems like you guys are discussing episodes in sequence, my question is about season 1, episode 5. Tasha approaches Lawrence at Best Buy and asks him out. Lawrence then kind of reminds her that he has a girlfriend, and then Tasha responds with a, oh yeah, I just thought, and then it trails off. What do you think she was about to say, and do you think she assumed that he and Issa weren't that serious, or was she expecting Lawrence to like be open across the line despite being in a relationship? I've always been curious about what was really going through Tasha's mind in that moment. Thank you for taking my question. Peace and love, y'all.
Ooh,
sister,
that's a good question.
I like you because you don't let no sentence go uncompleted.
Christopher, take note of how you leave a voice.
She said, I just thought what, bitch? I just thought, finish it. You thought what? Like, I love it.
These calls got you hot.
I love it. I love her observation.
What do you think she was going to say? Then I'll see what I think she was going to say.
No, I want to hear what you, because I literally have no idea. Because what could you have thought it was?
I think she was going to say, oh, I just thought maybe we had something. Because my thing is like, it's all the things you don't see in the show, right? Which is how many times he comes to the bank where they have that kind of familial relationship, cashing unemployment checks. On top of that, it's not like, oh, he's coming in with like job checks. So he's coming in and she calls him, coming here looking like Obama. You got a little bit of, they clearly have a dynamic with the bank. I've never had a dynamic with a bank person like that. Then they go eat lunch together. So they're not quite work wife, work husband, but they definitely have like, oh, that probably has happened more than enough. And maybe I think he probably has also shared. He's also been pretty vulnerable with her. I was trying to do this app. And so she's building him up like, oh, you can still do that. Like they're sharing life. So I think she probably was going to be like, oh, because I thought she clearly comes up, titties out.
You lost me at cashing unemployment checks because why don't you want better for yourself? You had access to this man's account. Yeah, he still has some savings, but like, girl, he cashing unemployment checks and you like, I want this man without a job.
But you were still with him. But the character Issa was still with him.
But
that's because
there was a history, but like, girl, please want more for yourself, I guess.
Yo, these last two calls hot. I'm with you, Anissa. I think she was going to say.
Because I didn't think about it. What I love about Anissa is she's that friend that's like makes you think about what you did. Yeah. She's the friend that gets you more hot. Like Tasha said, I just thought, what you think she was going to say? Girl, I don't know. What was she going to say? And what did he say? Like, whatever.
Do you have a friend in your life that can make you more
Without
hot?
Without a doubt. And that's why I don't tell her things. When I want to stay neutral, when I ask questions about my relationship, I have a friend. Like when I want to be told I'm wrong, I'll go to one friend.
Okay.
When I want to be like a person to give both sides, I'll go to another friend. And when I want like someone to be mad with me,
yeah,
and get me more mad, then it's that friend.
What do you think Molly is? Because we've not talked about other seasons, but there are times where she obviously in episode 7, she's ride or die. There's other episodes where she's like trying to do some investigation in your life. Like, what do you feel Molly? Is she all three? Is she all?
I think she's a balance because there's been times where she'll like with the Tasha situation where she's just like, hey, in season 2, mm-hmm. I always think about like her coming to the mirror when Issa's rapping after the Tasha thing and Issa being like, put that bitch up. And Molly being like, all right, I was waiting, not ready. I was just waiting on the thing. And then you're talking about like season 1 with the asking the questions post Lawrence cheating.
Yeah.
I think she's always going to like try to find the best interest for Issa, but she's ready to turn up. She's breaking into Andrew's house with her in season 5. Like she's down with the get down, but she'll still scold you after.
Yeah. I think she is that friend where she's like, I'm going to do the foolishness with you. But afterwards, you're going to have to hear these words. Yeah.
Yes, that is literally my friend. Yeah, all these questions have me so parched.
So funny, because I was going to say the exact same thing. So you know what we need to get.
Gatorade Lower Sugar. Oh my gosh, yeah. With summer here, Gatorade Lower Sugar is my go-to treat because you know it hydrates better than water.
Well, my kids and I love it too. There's no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or colors.
Yeah, and it has 75% less sugar than regular Gatorade. And all the electrolytes of regular Gatorade.
Well, that's why you need to go try Gatorade Lower Sugar today. Now back to the episode.
All right, we saved these final two questions for our fan segment presented by Gatorade Lower Sugar.
So our first question is, what was the thing that each of you learned about yourselves that you didn't realize until season 1 was out in the world and people were responding to it?
I would say again, so much of this was based off of my personal life and you don't realize like how selfish you might be, like, you know, like to hear decisions that I made and a lot of it is fictional, but like it comes from a place of how I think and my mentality and some of my friendships. And so to have that in a writer's room on display, it made me want to distance myself more from who that person was and like examine how I've grown since then. So it was like, it was personal growth. I don't like the way you...
No, I'm saying, I think that's actually fairly like insightful, actually.
I mean, it forces you to be more self-aware.
I just never knew that's what was... it's like, you know, people who don't know, like we would sit next to each other in the room every day. So you never know what people are like going through or thinking about. Because obviously we're talking about the show and our lives and all the things, but that's such an interesting... I would never have thought that.
Yeah.
I will say like working with you and Melina was really like a blessing I needed at that time that I probably didn't know I needed, you know, because, you know, I had been coming up, started in 2004 and this is like 2015. So you kind of are, you know, you're kind of indoctrinated by this is the way the business is and this is the way, these are the steps you have to take. And you and Melina just re-inspired me in a way that I was like, not growing disenchanted, but just being like, okay, this is the steps. And you guys were such an inspiration of like, that doesn't have to be the steps though. But when you are learning that it are the steps, that it was like, oh no, here's a person that's never done this before that's getting a show on HBO, and here's a person that's never directed like linear television that's doing it. It was just like, yeah, fuck it. Who nobody knows, you know what I mean? And so it was a really, I would always lean on you guys as like really good, like, yeah, it just made me question everything in the best way.
Yeah.
To go, why? And we were also watching other white counterparts doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, we're doing it too. And I think it was also a reminder of, and we're making our show, like, we think we're doing something really cool, but you don't know. And it was also a reminder of like, if you're getting in bed with someone, you got to ride this shit out together. And you don't get to like get into the bed with them and now be like, oh, I want to change this. And, or no, you like, you're hitching your wagons to each other. And like, we're going to hit, it was a just hitch your wagon to people and ride it out with them. And I think so much now people are afraid to take an L, or, and it's just like, no, if you're going to hit your wagon to them, y'all synced up now.
Yeah.
And it is what it is. You don't get to be like, if it didn't work, well, I would have done this. It's like, nope. You're in bed together. And so, but you don't know that that's going to, what's going to happen. We didn't know. It could have come out and who knows what would have happened, right? But it was just a reminder of like, almost like the opposite of what we did, which was like, pre-vet everything before you get in the bed. Because once you're in the bed, you're in the bed.
Yeah.
We didn't do any of those steps. We just went on vibes.
But when we knew, we knew.
But when we knew, we knew. And it was just a reminder of like, yeah, like, because obviously, as you know now, and so much of the business has changed so much since then, that you can be questioning always, is this right? Am I doing this? Is this accurate? Where are things glaring? There's so many questions you're always answering that you don't always have like a North Star. When you start fucking with your North Star, is like, that's when I think you start people lose their sense of where they're going.
Yeah.
And it was a good reminder, one, to be like, hey, if this is what you think is your North Star, because it doesn't, just because you follow that path doesn't mean success is going to come. You could follow that path and it not work out. But the point is not whether or not it worked out. The point is whether or not did you think that was the right choice, and can you live with the consequence or the outcome of that or the benefit of that? But pick your path. And I think it was just a good reminder to be like, hey, once you pick your path, go in that direction, go 100 miles an hour and just trust that that's the path. It doesn't mean it's going to work out, because we've worked on things that we've believed and it didn't work, or it did work or worked to varying degrees. But that's not really the point. The point is, do you feel like I was making the right choices with what I had to do at that time? And it was just a good reminder of that, and just being re-inspired in so many ways. So that's what I take.
Yeah, and you touched on like, once the show came out, and just like the battles that we fought, and the trust that we ultimately had in each other and ourselves, and seeing the rewards of the audience fucking with it, the confidence that we had going into season two was just also can't be replicated. I mean, in a way, because it was just such a validation of our efforts. In a way where it's like, okay, we know what the fuck we were talking about, what we were, you know, like dreaming about in the room, like really resonated in a way. And those battles that felt so fraught and felt uncomfortable, those uncomfortable conversations that we had to have to get what we wanted, all paid off. So like, no compromises next season. Of course, there's always going to be a level of humility when you walk into any collaboration or project, but like to have the confidence that, we know what the show is, we know what we're talking about, we know what we're doing, was just like so freeing.
Yeah. And I think in the best way, like it never felt like anyone could like penetrate our group of me, you and Melina. It felt like you can't like use me against her, or like get me to say something or get her to say something. Like it was like, no. And I think that, because I think in real life, if you give people those windows that they think they can, they will, right? And I think that we might disagree, but I mean, our disagreements were just like creative disagreements. It wasn't like philosophical disagreements of like how we're making this show or like who we are. We loved each other as people and loved having a good time together. So I think all of that is like, so paramount, but it was like, we never gave like parents, we never let the kids think they could come in and like put us against each other. And I think that was just so important that we were just galvanized as a group, to do that.
Definitely. All right. Let's play this last question from Jazzy.
Hey y'all. My name is Jazzy Johnson. I'm a big fan of the show. I'm also a writer and producer, and I work on podcasts. Hint, hint, ha, ha. But the question that I have is about the season finale. So the season one finale. You know, as a writer myself, one of the things I struggle with is thinking way too far ahead before dealing with the here and now. And I seem to dream up, like, a bit too far. And then I have to figure out, like, well, how do I make it from here to there in the process? And I feel like that kind of slows down my whole process. So I'm curious, with the season one finale, did you already have an idea of what you wanted to do for season two? And, like, the deliberate choice to, you know, show Lauren's dicking down Tasha. And then that was kind of like an indicator to the audience, like, oh, this man is not forgiving her anytime soon. This man has some healing to do. So I'm curious how you came about the idea of how you wanted to end the season finale, and if you already kind of know where you want to go for the next season, you know, how do you decide that? Thank you.
That's so funny. What a great question. She has the opposite problem that I have, where it's like she thinks too far ahead. I'm very much like,
I'm the same way. Yeah, like, I'm like, I'm trying to just get, I can't even. Just trust me, guys, you'll be there.
Yeah, we're going to get there.
Yeah.
In any season, we were always talking about, like, the next season, not necessarily the whole season. Right. And we talked about on this show, like, there are certain things that we planned to do in season two that we ended up pushing up in the first season because we didn't know we were going to get a season two. So, like, in crafting the finale, we for sure talked about, like, where Lawrence might be, where Issa might be in the next season, but we didn't have the specific stories. I think we just knew kind of attitudes, where like mentally where they would be, and like what the discord in their relationships might be. But the hardest things, like the relationship stuff was almost easy.
Yeah.
The harder things were like, this, the foundation is Issa and Molly. Where do they go? They fought, like, so where are they together? We know that Issa's going to be single. We know that Lawrence is going to be single. What kind of stories that we can tell, but like, what is what does that mean? And how will that carry us throughout the second season? And that's what we rely on the writer's room to do. I will say the most unique season where we knew, season three was like a season we knew was going to be kind of a transition season. Yeah. And we would always say in the room, like, oh man, season four gonna be fine. We did. What are we doing now? All right, cool. But season four, because there were just so many things that we knew we were setting up for season four in a way that we hadn't ever done before for any other season. And we were right. I feel like season four was one of our best.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we were nominated for the Emmys.
Oh yeah.
So many that season. And I think to your point, you know, our thing was always like, okay, what's the corner we can kind of paint ourselves into? And we kind of knew, like, oh, this Lauren, like, we didn't know it was going to be a wind down and she was going to go through a whole phase. A lot of that stuff would come from like, and again, most of those questions we would always, for people who don't know, we've talked about this, but for people who don't know, like, Issa and I would meet the top of every season. We'd go to a pool, we'd have some champagne, and we would just talk about life. We'd talk about our friends, our own life, things we went through before in the past. But it always started with, where are Issa and Molly? That was always like the build. Because it was, again, the relationship stuff would be like, well, of course, if he's having sex, does she find out? Like, those are more soapier elements to the show. But the foundational things were always like, what does this mean? Like, for the Malibu of, like, oh, they need to have a word that's like the reminder of that. And that was kind of the you know, but it wasn't like we knew she was going to have a whole phase, but we knew they were going to be connected. And so, you know, that's where having, again, great writers, shout out to all of our writers, all the seasons, who would always be giving us so much, again, great material. But we were always focused on Issa, Molly were the first tier, and then Lawrence or whomever she was dating at the time would be the second tier of that dynamic. But it always stemmed from there.
Yeah, what a fun time. But I think for someone who thinks ahead, I would just say, like, set up different molehills. Like, you're trying to do the mountain and, like, think about the, I would say, when you think of a season finale, you know it has to be juicy. You know it has to make people want to watch the second season. So, like, think about what that first chunk is if you're thinking ahead, that'll lead that. And then worry about the bigger thing later.
And the penultimate.
Yeah, the penultimate. That was something I learned.
You talk about that?
So HBO, like, that was something I learned in the writer's room. HBO always has a spectacular penultimate episode. And that was something.
Do you want to share with the
word? Oh, the penultimate is the second to last episode. Yeah. So, like, we were in an eight episode season. We always knew episode 7 had to hit. When we moved to 10 episodes, episode 9 had to hit and then be like the 1-2 punch for that finale. Yeah. And literally, when I watched Game of Thrones, like, I want to say the Red Wedding might have been a penultimate episode. Don't quote me.
I think it was.
But like, it always, every show that you watch, shit on HBO specifically, shit goes down in that penultimate episode. Yeah. And so for us, we always knew, you always wrote the penultimate episodes.
Well, like, the penultimates were obviously Lawrence finding out that she cheated. It's the dinner party where Issa and Lawrence go off on each other, and Issa trashes the thing in penultimate season 3 is Issa having the voices sneaking into Kendrick's.
Oh, can't, yeah, see Nathan's house.
See the Nathan's house. 4 was Issa and Molly break up outside and be like, we're done with 9. Our friendship.
Yeah,
9.
And then getting that text message from Molly, the accidental text.
And then the going away party where Lawrence and Nathan fight at the end of season 5, episode 9.
Well, this was fun.
Yeah.
Like, 10 years later, it's so great to reflect on the show with you, to look back on just what we built together and, like, you know, express our pride and our thanks. I'm just so grateful for you. I'm grateful for the viewers who wrote with us on this journey, and everybody who's discovering the show for the first time too.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Obviously, you know how I feel about you, and we're still doing stuff together. We still, as my wife always say, we still like each other. After 20-something years, we still like it. We're still here. Thank you guys at home for tuning in every week, for watching us, supporting us, revisiting our favorite moments. To all of our guests for coming on, thank you guys so much for making season 1 so much fun. Yes. But don't worry, the party is not over.
That's right. Because if you haven't heard, we are going on tour. We are coming to your city. We are having a block party near you. So make sure you get your tickets, and we will see you in your city.
Don't forget to subscribe to the show on YouTube and listen to wherever your podcasts are so you don't miss out.
And be sure to follow at Hooray Media so you can be the first to know everything.
It's been real AF. See y'all soon.
See y'all soon. See y'all at the party next time.